Hey, thanks so much for listening to this message. My name is Jason, and I'm one of the ministers here at the Madison Church of Christ. It's our hope and prayer that the teaching from God's Word you hear today will bless your life and draw you closer to Him. If you're ever in the Madison, Alabama area, we'd love for you to worship with us on Sundays at 8:30 or 10:30 a.m. If you have any other questions about the Bible or want to know more about the Madison Church, find us at madisonchurch.org. Be sure to also check out our Bible study podcast, Madison Church of Christ Bible Studies. Thanks again for stopping by.
So good to see all of you here today. You will notice my voice is about an octave lower than normal. That's because I've been at camp all week. So we had a great time. It was a great week, and I enjoyed it so much. But we are weary. So if you see someone next to you, especially in this section, and if you need to elbow someone to wake them up, that would be great. And if I happen to fall asleep while speaking, if you will come up and elbow me, that would be great as well. Thank you, Joel, for that chuckle. I want to say happy Father's Day to all our dads out there. I can tell you, I have one of the best in all the world, and he means the world to me. And I don't know what I would do without his presence in my life, his leadership, his instruction, the discipline he brought to our family, the love for the Lord that he brought. I just am so thankful that I had a father like that, and I know that you guys are all feeling the same way this morning. Ladies, you did a good job of dressing them. Several of them looked pretty good today. You cleaned them up really nice, and so we're appreciative of that. Just the opportunity to come together for worship this morning. Thank you all for being here. We are so excited every time we come together on Sunday. It's just a blessing to be here at Madison, to be a part of this family, to feel the warmth, the invitation, to feel the joy of coming together and worship together and throwing our praise to God and giving Him all that we have. That is so important to us, and we believe this to be a very important thing because it empowers us to tackle the things that we go through in life. We're excited about this series that we've started on Kings and Judges, and it's going to be a good study. We've enjoyed it already as Andrew kind of kicked things off last week, and you know my part of this story is the last part of Samson's story. And every time I look at this image, I think, why are you mad, bro? I mean, I don't know what it is, but he just has a look of scowl on his face, and Samson is certainly a brutal person. And there's so much that we think about with him. And last week, if you'll remember, Andrew talked to us about this, and we presented these trading cards, and John mentioned them earlier. If you're a child and you've not picked up one of those cards today, then when this is over with, go find a shepherd and let them know what you've heard in this lesson. I want you to pay close attention. I want you to pull some things together that when an elder asks you what it is that you learned from this lesson, be able to share a few things that they can then turn around and exchange with you, get to know you a little bit better, and then give you one of those cards that we have for Samson. They're really cool, and we think it's going to be a great thing. So you're going to be looking forward to that. This week, because we're in the second part of Samson, there's not a new card. So if you've already received one, then you don't need to do that. But if you have not received one yet, then definitely find a shepherd and answer a few questions and then get that trading card. Next week, we'll get with Gideon, and John Lay is going to share a message to us about that, and that'll be great. We'll look forward to that next week. So we're talking about Samson, we're finishing up, and really what I want to say about Samson is that he is a man who is dedicated to God. If you'll remember, he had been given the Nazarite vow from the moment he was born. He was going to be a Nazarite for life. And what that meant was three main things. One was no razor should ever come to their head. They should never be engaged or be wandering around like a vineyard or touching anything or partaking of anything that came from a vineyard. But then also no touching dead bodies. So anything that was unclean or dead, they were not allowed to go and see those things. And if you remember last week in Andrew's sermon, you'll find out that basically, Samson had violated most of this already. It talks about him going down into Timnah as he goes to find a woman. It says he looks at her and he sees her in his heart and he's like, oh, she's just beautiful. I got to have her for a wife. He goes down into the vineyard, and you remember that's a no-no to begin with. But then there's a lion that attacks him, says he tore him apart as someone would tear a young goat apart. You guys remember that last week. So he's done that. And then sort of in celebration and in boasting of who he is, he starts singing little songs. He's a little bit of a lyricist, and he comes up with these little cute songs that he can shout about and sing and tell everybody about it. As he's going into an area, he sees that dead carcass of the lion, and that carcass has got some bees and some honey working in there. So he scrapes it out of that dead body and feeds it to himself, feeds it to other people. And he's just sort of full of himself. And if you think about all that Samson has done to this point, there's going to be some things that you're going to find out that they're not just applying to Samson, but there are things that apply to each of us as well. And you know, when I know Andrew last week, he talked about how Samson to him reminded him a little bit of Superman with like his powers and all those kinds of things. And then of course, the morals didn't line up, that kind of thing. But for me, if I'm thinking about a superhero or a character that we think of in comic books and stuff like that, I always thought of Samson as sort of the Incredible Hulk. You know, like he had these moments where he would get angry and then he would just blow a gasket and then he would just go crazy on something. And so to me, he sort of represents that unhinged, out of control, you know, muscle bound, powerful person. And of course, the difference is obviously the Hulk is a made up figure, but Samson is real. And some of the things that we're going to read about today and experience as we study his story, we're going to be blown away at the strength that God gave him. And I want to make that point. We don't know exactly what Samson looked like. Was he big muscle bound, you know, like Mr. Boatwright over here? Or was he someone that was kind of like, I don't know, muscular like me, but maybe not as, you know, well, you know what I'm saying. We don't know for sure. What we do know is that the power that he had, the strength that he had, came from the Lord himself. And so when the Lord filled him with that spirit, then he had this massive strength and he could do amazing things. And ultimately, Samson's role was to bring Israel out of that oppression from the Philistines. And so he's there to judge Israel. He's been consecrated, set apart by God. But all along the way, you're going to see some things that bring about his weaknesses. And so how do you make strong people weak? Well, first of all, if they're all about self-gratification, if they're always about pursuing their own things and pleasing themselves, these, you know, strong people who have a sense of entitlement, like they deserve something, can be brought low. People who have this sense of self-reliance, people who have the inability to stay strong, but they're quick to compromise, people who have impulsive reactions. And I'm not talking about responding to situations, but I'm talking about in that moment with your temper flared up, with yourself out of control, responding to things in a way and reacting to things that become harmful. And then finally, not having any real positive influences in their lives. If you look at Samson's life, it's characterized by all of these things, and you look up and he's a bit unrestrained. He's kind of out of control. It's a struggle to trust in him, to let him lead these people. But that's who he is. And I guess the point that I want to make from all this is, you can have all those physical tools, and he did have those. He had, one, the presence of God with him. He had that sanctification. He was consecrated and set apart for the purpose of God. So he had God on his side. But he also had the physical strength to be able to do some things. And I guess it just goes to show that you can have all of those things, and with your decisions and with your heart not in the right place, you too can fail. And that can happen to each and every one of us. And so when I think about this story, one of the things that we talked about is he went into Timnah to get a wife, and he gets there and they throw a party. And again, we talked about that vow that he's taken, and he goes in and he throws a drinking party, is basically, as the translation understands, really kind of a beer party if you really want to gel it down. Kind of a primitive way of going about that. So he throws this party, and in that drunken stupor, he comes up with this cute little riddle to talk about that lion that he killed and the honey that he ate. And he says to the guys that are there, his boys, his groomsmen, if you will, that if you figure this out, then I'll give you each 30 garments of clothing. Okay, so his wife-to-be comes to him and says, hey, help me out here. Tell me what's going on. This is all in the Philistine area. So he started out in the wrong way by going after a Philistine wife, but now he's engaging in this riddle and he's kind of made a wager with them. Well, she wears him down enough where she tells the other groomsmen, and they in turn tell him what that is. And so he's pretty upset. He goes off into another town and he kills in another Philistine town 30 men and takes all their garments and comes back and says, okay, we're paid up, right? So that's going to roll us into Judges chapter 15, verse 1 and 2, because Samson has left the wedding party. They had been going 7 days, and he's been gone a while. And that's kind of bizarre, isn't it? Like, who does that? It's like he just goes AWOL for a little bit. And then it says, after some days at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife with a young goat. And he said, I will go to my wife in the chamber. In other words, they were married in the sense of betrothed, but they had not consummated the relationship. And so this was to come in and finish this off, and the two of them would be married. But in the process, it's been several days, and in the mix of all this, somehow the father said, hey, this is not good. He says, but her father would not allow her to go in. Father said, I really thought that you utterly hated her, so I gave her to your companion, to your best man. So that's pretty interesting. It's almost like one of these reality shows, like, you know, like, well, I mean, when having lemon, let's make lemonade. It's the weirdest thing to me that gives her over to the best man. So that's the way to lose your best man medal right there, by the way, people, is to take Samson's lady. And then he says, is not her younger sister more beautiful than she? Take her instead. Now, for all of us, that seems weird, doesn't it? And isn't it true that when you see dysfunction from afar, it's kind of easy to see it? But what's sad about it is often the people who are living the dysfunction don't recognize it or see it in their own lives. And I wonder sometimes if we all need to step back just a little bit and look at what we're doing and ask the question, are we kind of heading in the right direction? Are we doing things the right way? What do we need to shape differently in our relationships and those kinds of things? But it's really odd that they're going to this. He just hands off to the next one. I think there's fear here. There's worry about what might happen to Samson. Again, he's a little bit unhinged. He's a little bit out of control. And so this happens. So then we get to chapter 15, verse 3. If you want to read with me here, this is an interesting part of the story. It says, and Samson said to them, this time I shall be innocent in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. So Samson went and caught foxes and took torches, and he turned them tail to tail, put a torch between each pair of tails, and when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and set fire to the stacked grain and the standing grain as well as the olive orchards. I don't know how you saw this growing up. As I was growing up, I imagined literally them, you know, taking two foxes, and they're like, you know, they're chirping all over the place and trying to find a way to wrestle those things together and tie it in some kind of knot or something. And that just seems so bizarre to me. And, you know, nobody knows what a fox says anyway, but I just wonder what kind of noises were going on. And so I did some research about this, and maybe the way they did this is they had almost like a little bit of a harness that strapped the two foxes sort of together, and then they took a stick and tied it also to the tail so it kept them sort of in tandem working together, and then put this stick between the two tails, or tied the tails together and wedged the torch in there, lit it, and then let them go. Either way, I mean, what a creative way to go about destroying some stuff. And I tell you, when Samson got mad, he was pretty creative, right? So a lot of people will say, well, hey, how in the world did he find 300 foxes? I mean, how many of you see foxes all the time? We don't see a lot of them, do we? But in the original language, really maybe the best word for it is jackals. And they were said to run in packs of like 100 to 200 jackals at a time. So it's very likely that he could have found these fairly easy and wrapped them up and had some people help him do that. But he puts those together, and he does it all in revenge for the fact that he lost his wife. So what happens is he gets really mad, and they start going after him again. So let's get to chapter 15, verse 6. Then the Philistine says, well, who's done this? And they said, well, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her his companion. And the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. So Samson's like, okay, if this is what's going to happen, then I swear I'll be avenged on you, and after that I will quit. And then it says, he struck them hip and thigh with a great blow, and he went down and stayed at the cleft of the rock of Edom. So it says he struck them hip and thigh. That's kind of a catchphrase, really, in those days. The idea was the hip was the center part of the person. The thigh would be the strongest muscle. And so the idea was to take them out that way. So Samson goes off again. He has another one of those Hulk moments. And he calls upon the Spirit of God. And he goes out there and he takes them down. And it's an amazing scene to see him this, I don't know, just furious. And so in some ways, you know, as we're watching superhero movies and we think about this, you look at them and you go, oh, wow, they really took care of business. But, you know, it doesn't always affect people the same way. There's an arrangement that is made between Philistia and Judah. And it was this. The Philistines went to Judah and they were coming, or no, the Judah actually hearing about this went to Samson and they said, hey, why is it that you're doing this against Philistia? Do you not know that we are under their control, that they are our leaders, and you are creating this great trouble? And so 3,000 men go to him and they make a decision, or they go to the Philistines and they say, we're gonna bring him to you. So they go to Samson and they're talking to him about taking him and delivering him over to the Philistines. And that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, Samson doesn't want to kill his own people. So he says, now, are you promising me that you're not going to kill me? And they said, no, we're not going to kill you. We're only going to deliver you into the hands of the Philistines. And so Samson, being who he is, said, okay, let's go. So they take him, they bind him up, and they take him. And it seems to me that while they did recognize his power, and there was an element of fear that they had about Samson, it also is kind of sad to me that they don't have any kind of respect for his authority. The whole point of his leadership is for him to take them out of this oppression with the Philistines. But the people of Judah are okay with being oppressed. And so instead of seeing his power as God helping him and God helping them, they see that as a nuisance and a hindrance to where they are in this moment. And so they turned him over. They don't have respect for the authority that he's been given. And I think maybe some of this, and maybe some of us can identify with this, is erratic behaviors. You know, Samson is not one of those even kill kind of guys. He's not one of those people that just is settled in who he is. He is a guy who is perpetually, constantly high or low. He's always seeking the next thing. He's impulsive, as Andrew talked about last week. And he's making these decisions in the moment, and he's ruling by his eyes and by his anger and his frustration and those kinds of things. But what happens when we come around people who have these kind of erratic behaviors? Well, these are just three things that I thought of that happen in leadership. If someone is erratic like this, first of all, it creates instability. Folks at home, if we are up and down and we're screaming and yelling one moment, laughing and having the best time the next, what happened, these highs and lows create the environment that it's not very settled. It's not, you don't know what to expect from one thing to the next. And that kind of environment can create anxiety. It can create, you know, an uneasiness with people. And it can make us worry about what's next. You know, it's kind of like, I think about this with regard to every time I get up to preach, Cindy's over there like, what's he going to say? What's he going to say? You know, that kind of thing. Because that's the truth of it, right? So it fosters anxiety, but then also in the process, if we're unhinged all the time, then it undermines trust. So here you have Samson, who is sanctified by God. He's given this power. He's given this ability to do great things, and yet his own people don't really respect his leadership, and he's just kind of out of control. So I think maybe it's good for all of us to ask the question, especially if you're in a leadership role and in any way in your job or in your company or environment, whatever it may be. You know, how are you? Are you too bent up and down? Are you too emotional at times? Are you providing that stability? What about fathers in our homes? Are we kind of all over the place? Or moms, are we all over the place? Are we coming unhinged? Are we, like, there's something to be said for stability. Yes, we're going to get angry from time to time. Yes, we're going to be elated from time to time. It's not wrong to have those emotions. But when we go from one thing to another and those extremes are going back and forth, it creates an anxiety and an unsettledness. And I think what we're learning from Samson is that we need to find, as God's people, that stability, that foundation that holds us strong, keeps us together, makes everybody at peace and calm. So the next thing that happens is, we're calling this the massacre at Jawbone Heights, because it says that what took place is they came and they encamped around Judah. Sorry, let me get to verse 14. So when he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted to meet him. So here the people of Judah have brought Samson over to the Philistines. So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became a flax that had caught fire, and his bonds melted off his hands. And he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey and put it on his hand and took it, and with it he struck 1,000 men. Unbelievable. Now, you may say to yourself, well, why is there a fresh jawbone laying around for someone to grab and to use as an instrument? And Samson's looking around going, oh, well, there you go. And he grabs the jawbone and he starts waylaying people. Well, actually, in these days, those jawbones, especially if they were fresh, were used to plow up soil. They would turn them over upside down, and they would use them as a way to drag and pull their property. And as long as those jawbones were fresh, they were nice and strong. If they got old and dried out by the sun, they would become brittle and break. And so it's likely that something like this would have been laying around. So he gets that, and then he uses it to slay all these people. And it's kind of a fascinating thing, isn't it, for him to use that? Well, what happens now, again, because he's such a lyricist, he goes around taunting everybody, and he comes up with a little jingle. And if you read it in the scriptures, you're going to read it, and it's like, okay, well, that's okay, but it doesn't really rhyme or anything like that. But in the original language, it would have been like a play on words, like a double meaning type thing. And we won't get into what that means, because it's not necessarily, it's a little off color, but as you look at this, it'd be something like, you know, he was the kind of guy that would come up with a pun for a lot of different things. And I think he was that guy that he would do something and then he would say a little funny thing and everybody would be like, you know, they didn't know if they should laugh or not laugh. But it'd be like someone like taking a handful of poisonous dirt and touching it to their tongue and dying, and then him going, another one bites the dust. You know, that's kind of the way he would throw that out there, and he would do that as a way to just play around and be kind of haughty and full of himself. So it didn't sit well with people as he's doing these kinds of things. And although he was victorious in that moment, it's interesting that God actually sends him a little bit of humility, because after that defeat and after he's beaten all those people, and again, filled with the Spirit of God, empowered to do these things, and then in that moment, he kind of sits down and he's really thirsty to the point of death. He is very dehydrated and he's spent, and he sort of says something to God like, am I going to die here in the midst of all this by the hands of the Philistines, by thirsting to death kind of thing? And he says this, and it's interesting that that's probably what he needed. Isn't it true that probably Samson needed thirst as a reminder of who it was that provided with him with all that power and with all that might, and who it was that provided everything for him? So in this moment, once again, Samson is replenished by God. God gives him what he needs in that moment. Again, not because Samson is necessarily the best guy, but because he's executing what God has wanted, which is the Israelites out of that Philistine control. So then we get to Judges chapter 16, verse 1 through 3. And it says, Samson went to Gaza. And there he saw a prostitute and went into her. And the Gazites told Samson, has come here. And they surrounded the place. And get this, they set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. So he goes in with the worst of intentions. He goes in and does something very sinful. Again, after this, it's so mind-boggling, isn't it, that a man who is so supported and so helped by God could suddenly turn around and just lose track of morality and those kinds of things. And he goes into the city, and it says that they knew he was there. He was baited into this place, and they locked the gates, and they're setting an ambush for him. They're going to come and get him. And so the next part of it says, but Samson lay until midnight. And at midnight he arose and catch this, just walked straight down to the doors, picked the city gates up, okay? And the city gates in these times would have probably been anywhere from 8 to 10 feet tall. They would have been somewhere between a foot and a half to 3 feet thick. Because the Philistines were masters of ironwork and those kinds of things, they would have had a lot of reinforcement, a lot of metal. These doors would have weighed a ton. And I'm serious, they would have been so heavy. And it says he just pulled those up by the post, pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and carried them from Gaza to the top of the hill that is in front of Hebron. Now, so if you were to look this on a map, you're going to see that Hebron is about anywhere from 35 to 40 miles, depending on the way they would go, 35 to 40 miles up to Hebron. So there's been a lot of disputing about, did the guy actually CrossFit it all the way, you know, up the hill up there to Hebron? Because again, it was like 3,000 feet of elevation increase as he's doing this. Well, there it could be that he did that, and certainly if God had the power to give it to him, he could have done that. But there's also a place that's in between Gaza and Hebron on a hillside that some suggest that he took those gates up there so both groups could see that God had given him the power to take up those city gates. Well, why did he take the city gates? Well, in those days, the city gates represented the safety of the place. And if you lost your city gates, then you lost the city. And so metaphorically, it was Samson's way of saying, look, you can set an ambush however you want, but I'm going to be victorious here. And so he hoofs those up all the way up to the mountain to put them down. Now, if you don't think that's a big deal, just go home, take your front door off of its hinges, put it on your back, like stroll on down your neighborhood for about a mile. And if people don't turn you into an insane asylum somewhere, you can find out about what that's like and then multiply by about 50 or so. And that's what it would be like. Unbelievable strength, unbelievable power. But then we get back to Samson's weakness. And you guys know the story of Samson and Delilah. We have talked about this so many times. And, you know, really and truly, even today, when you think about the word Delilah, with it comes the idea of a seductress, right? Someone who's underhanded, who is using her womanly wiles to bring someone down. And so in this situation, he goes back down into this area and he finds Delilah. And immediately, she starts messing with him because she has been prodded by the Philistine lords to get to the truth of where his strength comes from. They're tired of watching him do what he's doing, and so they're ready to bring him down. So they want to know where the source of his strength is. And the thing about this is, as you look at the situation, you know, Delilah tries three different times to try to get certain things out of him. And you know what? Unfortunately, it seems to me that Samson really enjoys this exchange. Like, he's so full of himself, he's so arrogant in this moment that he actually invites this struggle back and forth. He likes to make her think that he's telling her something so it can bring him down, the source of his strength. And of course, all of us are thinking it's the hair, right? But it's not the hair. It's the power of God working in him. The hair is the symbol of that consecration to God, but the strength comes from God. So she is asking him over and over. So he plays these games. I named these games, okay? First of all, I'll get to that. I'm going to get to this first. This past week at camp, I was walking down the road, and there's a little boy who was talking about fishing. I love me some fishing. I said, well, that's good, man. Well, how do you go about fishing? Well, I just get my rod out there, and I get my little hook, and I throw it in that water, and I catch that fish. I said, well, you just throw the hook in there without anything on it? He's like, no, I put some corn on there. I put a cricket. I put a worm on there. I said, what are you doing when you put that on there? I'm just trying to feed those fish, man. And I said, you're trying to feed the fish or you're trying to catch the fish? He said, well, it's kind of both. I said, right, because what does the bait on the hook do? He said, well, the bait on the hook feeds the fish. I said, no, the bait conceals and hides the hook that traps the fish. And I think that's sort of what's happening here. Delilah is being used by these Philistine lords as the bait to get him so they can hook him, right? And so it says this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. They came to her and said to her, seduce him, see where his strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound that one could subdue you. Now, guys, learn to listen or ladies, learn to listen. I'll just say it that way. Because anytime someone says, what can I do to make you terrible and not yourself and bring you down? If someone says that to you, understand right now, you just need to cut bait and leave. Okay? That's the truth. You just need to get out of town. You need to leave that relationship. It's not healthy. It's not productive for you. And it's going to lead in your demise. But I think too often we do what Samson does, which is look at the person and say, I desire that person. And we overlook some things that maybe are trouble spots. And we need to be very careful about that. So I told you that Samson liked to play games. And in doing so, he invited some temptation. And I was suddenly reminded of this text in 1 Corinthians 10:12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. And another translation says it this way. So be careful if you are thinking, oh, I would never behave like that. Let this be a warning to you, for you too may fall into sin. I think the struggle is that what Samson was doing was inviting that in. And so he's in there and he's playing the games. And so I named these games. The first one is the bowstrings of futility. She was going to wrap bowstrings around. He said, if you just wrap these bowstrings around me, then I will lose all my strength and I'll become like every other person. So that didn't work out. And he's over there giggling and laughing, having a good time. Because it doesn't really say that he killed. He said he just came to, the, you know, Samson, the Philistines are on you. And he comes to and he's like, oh, and they run off. Well, then he's like, oh, if you put ropes on me. So we'll call this one rope-a-dope, right? And they put the ropes around him and tie him up, and he breaks those free when the Philistines come upon him. Oh, this is fun, and it's a great game. And you can see his arrogance building, that he's untouchable, he thinks at least. And so he says, oh, take my hair and bundle it up and put it in this, that. It's like, that's why I call this one hair do's and don'ts. You could also say getting my hair did. That's another other known name of it. But he plays this game with her one more time, and still she's frustrated because all of those things are not yielding what she's really looking after, and that is the source of his weakness. So she prevails upon him. The Bible says, she said to him, how can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times, and you have not told me where your great strength lies. And when she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. And he told her all his heart, and he said to her, a razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak like any other man. So it says she made him sleep on her knees. She called someone to come and shave the seven locks of his head. And she began, check this out. She began to torment him. I was talking to Andrew after service this morning. It was something that both of us were saying. We had never caught that before. You ever caught that? As you read this story, we think the cut hair. In fact, I think a lot of us may think that she cut the hair. But it says that someone else was brought in to cut the hair. And while that was happening, she tormented him. I don't know what she did. But isn't that just the way it goes? When you give yourself over to something that you know is not healthy for you, it begins to eat you up and torment you. And it's a struggle for you. And his strength left him. And maybe this is one of those things that we need to be reminded of. We can either allow God to rule over us, and we can do that willingly, or in some cases, God will have to overrule and do what he needs to do for us. Many of you may have heard this story. In 1963, there was this submarine that had a nuclear reactor on board, and it was going to be like a cutting-edge military tool to be used. And they were doing all kinds of tests in 1963, and they sent it out into the North Atlantic to do some testing. And as they did, something happened where water pressure, there were some pipe issues where some welding was not done maybe appropriately, or maybe they tried a new technique and it was a little bit weaker than they thought it would be. And under such intense pressure, what happened is it began to spring a leak. The leak comes in with great force into the cabin area. It gets into some electrical systems and shorts out things, and they begin to lose their ability to do some things. In the process, they try to do what they would do, which they would release the ballast with air tanks, and it would try to help them resurface the submarine. But in the process, that compressed air under all this pressure clogged up the valve, And so as a result, things began to build up inside. Water rushed into that area, flooding it out. And because they lost all the systems, it began to sink deeper and deeper. And you know what happens as you get deeper and deeper into water? The pressure gets greater and greater. And when it overcomes the pressure that's inside the cabin, it implodes. And that's what happened to the Thresher. It sank all the way down to the bottom of the North Atlantic. And all of the people that were in there, 129 people, were killed as a result of this test that they were doing to see about its capabilities. Well, what lesson can we learn from that? The power of God in you must be stronger than the pressures that are around you. And unfortunately for us in this story, as we listen to the story of Samson, he was not strong enough internally to manage the pressures that he put himself in on the outside. And we can look at him and we can think of him as a superhero, super strong ability to do all these great things. But when it really boils down to it, he was not strong enough to maintain that on his own. And here's a message for all of you and for me. None of us are strong enough. If we keep putting ourselves in these bad situations over and over, that pressure is ultimately going to fold in on top of us and we're going to implode in the same way. The power of God must be stronger than the pressures that are surrounding you. Maybe one of the saddest verses here is Judges 16:20. But Samson did not know God had left him. And I wonder if there are those among us who we find ourselves maybe kind of struggling along in our faith. Maybe we're not really devoted at this point. We're kind of going through the motions. We don't want anybody to know that we're in this place. So we come to church and we come to fellowship activities and we're at Bible study and we talk the talk a little bit. But inside there's something going on that we're not really doing well. And we find ourselves feeling that there's a distance between us and God. I think Samson had no clue because Samson became self-reliant. And maybe we're guilty of that too, thinking that we have the ability to manage all of this on our own. When Proverbs 3:5 reminds us that we're to trust in the Lord with all of our heart, not to lean on our own understanding, but to acknowledge Him that He'll direct our paths. And I think that's what Samson failed to do. So the Philistines seized him. They gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in the prison. Ultimately, all of that boisterousness, all that power, all that strength, all those things, when God stepped out of the situation and gave him over to his own temptations, then he found himself without strength, without sight, and without the Lord. Sometimes our eyes will get in the way of us seeing God's will. So Samson, in his final plea to God, let's go to chapter 16, verse 23. It says, "Now the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to rejoice. And they said, 'Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand. He's given our enemy to our hand, the ravager of our country, who has killed many of us.' And when their hearts were merry," meaning when they had drunk enough, "they said, 'Call Samson that he may come and entertain us.' So they called Samson out of the prison and he entertained them. They made him stand between the pillars. And Samson said to the young man who held him by the hand, 'Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests that I may lean against them.'" Let me tell you kind of what's happening here. They're in an area, and what is happening is there is worship and praise given to their false god Dagon. And all of the lords of the Philistines are gathered. And it's said that there was like some kind of amphitheater on the inside of this. And then there was like this border around where there was like a terrace up top. And in that terrace, there would be thousands of people gathered around. And when they would bring a prisoner out to entertain them, what it was basically come out. People would throw stones. They would shout all kinds of things and hurl things at them. They would strike them with whips and beat them. They would do all kinds of things that were terrible to them. And they would make them sing and dance. And it's almost like, you ever seen someone like in an old Western where they go, "Dance, boy," and they start shooting the gun and dance. It's that kind of thing. It was, they were taunting him and mistreating him. And they were doing this. And you would think, as this is a worship to God, that Samson's mind would be angry because it's not about your God. It's about him fleeing. And you would think in this moment of humility that he would see it that way. But listen to what it says Samson said. He called the Lord and said, "Oh Lord, please remember me and please strengthen me only this once, oh God, that I may avenge on the Philistines." Catch this. "Not because they're talking evil about you, God, or that they are raising their God above you." No. Still, in this moment, he wants revenge for his two eyes. Does that not blow you away? In all of this humility and all that has taken place to bring him to this lowest point, and still all he can think about is himself. Have our eyes caused us to lose perspective? Because when you really gel it down, Samson was a reflection of the people of Judah. Remember when it says all of Israel did what was right in their own eyes? That's Samson. He is that picture of impulsivity. He is that picture of overreacting. He is in the moment. He is doing what he thinks is right in that moment for himself. All about self-gratification. Samson grabs the two middle pillars on which the house rested. It says he leaned his weight on. I imagine he leaned forward as hard as he could. And it says one hand, right hand was on the one, left hand on the other. And Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." He bowed with all of his strength, and the house fell upon the Lord's and upon all the people who were in it. So the whole structure sat on these pillars. So when he collapsed it, the 3,000 people up top fell on top of the lords of the Philistines and all the dignitaries down below, and also on Samson. So the dead whom he killed at his death were more than those whom he had killed during his life. Let's talk about some takeaways from this. It's a sad ending to Samson's life, but we also have to recognize that God was still using him to effect his will. So we talked about this. Samson was just a reflection of the Israelites. He just did what was right in his own eyes. The second takeaway is this: temptation is always difficult to avoid, but it's especially difficult when we begin inviting it into our life every day. When we think, "I'm strong enough, I can go to these places." And still, I think we find ourselves sometimes saying, "Yeah, I know I don't need to be there, but it's okay. I'll go there and I'll be strong." And what I want us to recognize is when you make that choice to put yourself in that surrounding, just like Samson did with Delilah, that you basically are saying, "I'm okay with failing." Because we're not strong enough on our own, outside the will of God and outside of his strength and his power, to maintain a good standing with him when we put ourselves in these environments that are so sinfully tempting. And we need to be careful about that. Our strength to overcome will always be in connection with the Spirit of God in us. You want to overcome temptation, it's because God will help you. Pray to him, ask him to deliver you from temptation. You stay away from those things. You do what Joseph did when he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. He left his coat and everything. He just ran away and got away from that situation. But we have to recognize that that strength comes only in God. And then finally, God uses the imperfect to work his perfect will. So I'm hoping as we've talked about this and we look at Samson, there's a lot of things that we can say. Hey, it's fantastic. Like there's some great stories in there. There's some amazing feats of strength that take place. All of it by the hand of God, not by Samson's own strength. But we can look at that and be amazed by it. But also don't miss the point that this is a failure in that this guy had every opportunity to lead Judah, to lead Israel. He had every opportunity to bring them out, not just to deal with the Philistines and put them to death and wipe them out. No, he had the opportunity to actually lead and for people to follow his leadership. And he wasted all of that opportunity away. And so I hope that all of us recognize what God is doing in your life and all that he's put in front of you and all that you have at your disposal, all your gifts, all your abilities, and all the opportunity that sits in front of you. And that you're not letting those things slip away by impulsivity, making bad choices, surrounding yourself with things that are not good for you. We all have the ability to make better choices. So this morning, if there's anyone in the audience who is going through that tough time, and maybe you just need the strength of others, maybe you need the strength of God, maybe you need forgiveness of your sins and a fresh start. You know, if you are ready to respond to the invitation and you want to be baptized into Christ, to have your sins forgiven, washed away, to put on to clothe yourself with Jesus Christ, we want you to do that this morning. And if you're a person who just needs encouragement, needs a support, and needs to repent and change, we hope you'll come forward and do that this morning while together we stand as we sing.